It's Air Talk. Good morning. I'm Larry Mantle. So appreciate your being with us. Hope you're having a good day. We're going to be talking a little bit later this hour about the dear departed brands that maybe had grown close to you and are no longer around. We'll also talk about which brands are maybe teetering as we go into the next decade very soon. This hour, our focus is on college debt, which collectively is about $1.5 trillion, huge amount of student debt that collectively Americans are dealing with. The question is there a role for government in helping graduates better handle that burden? We have Democratic candidates who've offered a number of different approaches, including full debt forgiveness in some cases. But critics say the problem with that is you've got taxpayers then subsidizing outrageously high tuition at some schools. Joining us to talk about the different proposals, including that being formed by the Department of Education, is Paul Fain. He's with Inside Higher Education, the online publication, and he's news editor at IHE. Paul, good to have you with us again. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk first of all about what the Department of Education appears to be working on at this point. Totally distinct from what the Democratic candidates are looking at.
Yeah. So the Department of Education under Secretary DeVos recently proposed creating a new federal agency that would manage the $1.5 trillion federal loan debt portfolio. And the main justification for that idea, which is really not developed at this point, other than a concept, would be to simplify things for borrowers, to simplify ways to repay their debt, and to run it more like a business, she said. But I will say, for those watching, there could be more to come. The Washington Post reported that President Trump wants to come up with some loan debt cancellation plans of the White House's and may actually come out with something as soon as this week.
Wow. There also is a proposal for income sharing agreements, as they're called. Can you describe what that is?
Sure. So basically, it's a form of repayment plan that a student and the lender come up with, where they agree to repay their debt based on their income over a certain term of years. And you can see how this would work out for folks who work in lower paid jobs. They'd end up paying less of their tuition in the end. And it also has the benefit of encouraging folks who might be nervous about taking on loan debt to give it a whirl with a little bit less risk if they are in lower paying jobs. And I will say this has some political support on both sides of the aisle as well.
Has there been the critique offered that could incentivize people taking lower paying jobs just because they'd prefer to work particular jobs that maybe aren't as remunerative, as opposed to people looking for something that might pay them more so that they could pay off more of their debt?
You know, these ideas are still so new. I haven't heard that one in particular. I think one of the biggest concerns that we hear from folks is that this is just another potential form of private loan. A lot of people, there's debate over that. I mean, the terms of this are different than a conventional loan, for sure. But I think there are some folks who prefer that we subsidize the cost of an education rather than come up with creative ways for folks to repay their debt.
We're talking with Paul Fain. He's news editor at Inside Higher Education. I'd like to hear from you. If you have suggestions for any role for the government when it comes to the staggering collective total of student debt at this point, we're at 866-893-KPCC. And if you'd actually prefer the government stay out of it, maybe you think there's some sort of a private sector approach that could provide relief to those burdened by student loan debt, we're at 866-893-KPCC. That's 866. 693-5722. Paul, if the president comes up with his own debt relief plan, that too would have to work its way through Congress, right? Just as any of the Democratic proposals would have to do.
Correct. And I think what we're really seeing here is growing awareness among politicians in Washington and in state capitals that student debt levels have become a really big campaign issue, and that there's a wide range of angst about it across the political spectrum. And, you know, the Washington Post piece on what the White House is considering didn't make clear that they would come up with an answer here, because while the president reportedly is interested in outflanking Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders with a populist proposal that really attacks growing student debt levels, the White House is also not interested in spending as much money to pay down that debt as you might see from a Warren or Sanders. So they're in a bit of a bind there in coming up with a solution.
Paul, do you know what percentage of the debt is owed to private lenders versus government loans?
I don't at this point know exactly what that is, but I do know that the federal government essentially took over the federal loan portfolio under the Obama administration, and the amount that's owed to private lenders is gradually sunsetting. So that $1.5 trillion right now, the federal government is managing the vast majority of that portfolio.
We're talking with Paul Fain of Inside Higher Education. Again, our phone lines are open for you at 866-893-KPECC. And Paul, what is the response of colleges and universities to this topic? Would they like to see just, you know, essentially taxpayers take this on and all of the loans to be forgiven, paid off?
Well, that's a good question. If they want that, they haven't been saying it publicly. I mean, I think colleges do realize, college leaders increasingly, that they're going to have to do something to address student debt. You see a lot of private colleges trying things like tuition freezes or tuition resets, but the cost continues to go up, and I don't think anybody has a great answer on how to deal with that. One thing I think you'll hear a lot of folks within higher education call for is increasing the federal Pell Grant award, which is about $6,000 right now for the academic year. A bunch of even the centrist Democratic presidential candidates are looking to maybe double the amount to $12,000 a year. And if you did that, you'd see a lot less debt among students, regardless of tuition levels.
We're talking with Paul Fain, Inside Higher Education news editor. Also with us is Mark Kantrowitz, who's a student financial aid expert. He's vice president of research of the site savingforcollege.com. Mark, it's good to have you with us. Your thoughts on all these different competing plans. Are they intended to deal with monthly payments that students are finding difficult to pay back, or is it the length of repayment that's the bigger issue? Just people getting frustrated, they don't feel like they're going to get out from under for many, many years.
Well, one of the ways in which one reduces a monthly loan payment is by stretching out the term of the loan to 20, 25, or even 30 years. But the problem with stretching out the repayment term is you will pay more interest over the life of the loan, and you'll still be repaying your own student loans when your children enroll in college.
And how is the interest rate on these loans fixed? Who determines that, and what's the typical range on that?
The interest rates on federal student loans are set by Congress. It resets each year, so it's a fixed rate for the life of the loan, but each year's new loans has a new interest rate that is pegged to the 10-year Treasury bill plus a margin. So the current rates are for Stafford loans for undergraduate students is 4.529%. For graduate students, it's 6.079%. And for the PLUS loan, which is borrowed by parents as well as graduate students, 7.079%.
Okay. So those rates, are those generally reflective of the lower interest rates that we've got now? Have student loans in the past been considerably higher interest?
Well, and they are relatively low interest rates for an unsecured loan. And they have been lower in the past. The lowest rate as a fixed rate was 3.4%. And when interest rates were variable and one could lock them in by consolidating them, they were as low as 2.875%. So people look at, a few years ago I could have gotten a lower rate. But there's constantly that, well, should we have variable rates and have them adjust, or should we have fixed rates and lock in a low rate? But most students couldn't qualify for rates this low on their own without some form of security, like a home equity loan or parents as a co-signer.
And what is the biggest complaint that people with student loan debt are making about? Just they couldn't get a job that paid as much as they anticipated to pay the loan?
Well, most people who graduate from college are able to repay their student loans. And so long as your total student loan debt at graduation is less than your annual starting salary, you should be able to pay it back in 10 years or less. The problem really isn't a student loan problem so much as a college completion problem. Students who drop out of college are more than four times more likely to default on their student loans than students who graduate, and they represent about two-thirds of the defaults. So they have the debt, but they don't have the degree that can help them repay the debt.
We're at 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Also with us is Mary Claire Amsalem, who's education policy analyst at the Heritage Foundation, the conservative think tank in D.C. She's a researcher focused on education policy. Thank you very much for being with us. What do you think should be, you know, within the realm of debate on helping students deal with their loan debt?
Yeah, it's certainly an overwhelming issue that many Americans are toying with today. That, you know, how do we handle the $1.5 trillion in student loan debt that's out there? We now have, you know, pretty overwhelming economic evidence to suggest that the federal lending programs have done more harm than good, and in fact, that it is the abundance of federal student loans out there in the system that students have easy access to that has encouraged colleges to raise their tuition prices, and that's how you see, you know, so many students defaulting on their student loans are unable to make those important payments. And so the long-term goal should be to reduce, if not eliminate, the federal student loan programs and allow the private market to enter into this space, offer competitive rates for students, and get rid of a lot of this predatory lending that we're seeing happen through the federal lending programs that allows students to take out massive loans without any consideration for how a student is to pay that back.
Well, and you're talking about the government loans being predatory themselves?
Oh, absolutely. We see that there's virtually no underwriting that occurs at the federal level, and that's not something that would occur in a truly private lending market. You wouldn't see students, you know, getting these loans without any consideration to, you know, does the student have a plan to pay back this loan? And so we're seeing students who are $1.6 trillion in student loan debt, and it's important to keep in mind the taxpayer exposure in this conversation. When students do default on their debts, it's American taxpayers who are picking up that tab. And so this is, you know, a national conversation that we should be having, and we should be considering whether or not these types of loans really is to the benefit of the country and to the students.
If it was not taxpayers who were backstopping the loans and this was all in the private sector, wouldn't you have interest rates that would be considerably higher to account for that fact that, the companies with unsecured loans would need to protect their investment in providing those loans? Would that not make the loans far more expensive than now?
You would see, so right now interest rates are, I would argue, arbitrarily set by Congress. They're just sort of set at a basic rate that doesn't necessarily reflect the value of the loan. And so in a truly private market, you might see some loans be quite high, but you might see some loans be quite lower than you do see today. And that's the great advantage that we would see in a competitive system, is you would see some lenders compete to offer students the best rate on their loans. Unfortunately, with the federal government controlling 90% of all student loans that are out there right now, the private market has been completely crowded out and unable to compete, which is why you see such high interest rates.
But for students, the 4.529 that Mark Kantrowitz quoted, it's hard to imagine with unsecured loans of this size that lenders would be competing at an interest rate even as low as that, would they?
I think we would certainly see that. And I mean, we prior to the 2010, you know, takeover that I would argue is a nationalization of the student loan program, you still didn't have a completely private market. You still had the federal government backing private loans. And so I think we weren't quite able to see that competition play out the way many of us would like for it to see. I think that you would see tuition drop significantly if you got the federal government out of the business of lending student loans, because then institutions would need to be somewhat more responsive to the needs of their students. And it's important to keep in mind that prior to 65, which is when the federal government got into the business of lending to students, there was no student loan debt. I mean, people weren't trying to come up with money to pay for college. It simply wasn't a conversation. And I would argue that the underlying factor there is federal involvement in the student lending process.
Mark C., agreeing with you, says get rid of federally funded loans, and you'll see the tuition rates drop as well. Again, I welcome your calls. We're at 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. The House just passed the $1.4 trillion government-wide spending package. Legislation funds the border wall, boosts defense and domestic programs. Again, the House of Representatives has just passed the $1.4 trillion spending package. We'll continue our conversation on the best way to deal with escalating student loan debt. We're at 866-893-5722. Back in 1 minute on Air Talk. Great to have you with us. I'm Larry Mantle. You're listening to Air Talk. Our guest last hour, Jeffrey Engel of SMU. Just saw him there on CNN. He said that an hour ago with us. We're taking your calls on student loan debt. We're at 866-893-KPECC. You can also ask a question or comment about whether you see a role for the federal government in student loans. Do you think it'd be better to have them privatized? That's the view of our guest, Mary Claire Amsalem of the Heritage Foundation, Mark Kantrowitz of SavingForCollege.com, talking with us about some of the challenges that students face, and Paul Fain of Inside Higher Education, talking about how this is such a huge issue now in American higher ed. We're at 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpcc.org, and share your thoughts about what, if any, more could be done with student loans. Mark Kantrowitz, back to you, your response to the recommendations that Mary Claire Amsalem was making.
I don't think they're realistic. I mean, first of all, there are two different types of private loans. There are private lenders made federal loans through 2010 with a government subsidy, and that's what ended in 2010. It wasn't a government takeover of a purely private lending program, but rather a government takeover of a government lending program. And since then, about 7 to 10% of new student loans have been made by private lenders under purely private loan programs. And if these lenders were to offer rates, fixed rates that were lower than the federal loans, ain't they'd have lots of borrowers. But they can't compete with the subsidized rates that the federal government offers. On the other hand, I'd be perfectly fine with replacing federal loans with grants. Federal loans are borrowed predominantly by low and moderate and middle income families. And there's a proposal by Dr. Wayne Johnson to replace the federal student loans with up to $50,000 of grants per student spread out over 4 years or 7 years, depending on undergrad versus grad. And then the federal government would get out of the student loan program. The private lenders would be making loans predominantly for people attending higher cost colleges. And so you'd have, the loans would be more a matter of choice than a matter of necessity. These days, more than 70% of students are graduating with a bachelor's degree in student loan debt, and they have, to some extent, no choice in the matter because the government gave loans instead of grants, because loans are cheaper to the government than grants.
Do we know what percentage of college students are working? Because I'm wondering if it's actually lower. There's so many people that are in minimum wage jobs now who just stay in those jobs and don't move up, which would seem in many cases makes it harder for college students to be able to move into those positions. And I wonder if that's had an effect on the ability of students to make money while going to school.
I think more than half of college students are working of at least a part-time job, and not just a work-study job, but a true part-time job. And the problem with this is that if you work a full-time job, you're half as likely to graduate within 6 years as compared to a student who works 12 hours or less a week, because it takes away too much time from the academics. So it's except for a community college, it really isn't possible these days to work your way through college and still graduate.
Let's talk with Chris in Westlake Village. You're on Air Talk.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for having me. I think one important fact that's rarely discussed is the issue with student loans and bankruptcy. And whether or not the federal government stays in the industry or not, I think restoring the rights for, you know, these millions of consumers that are facing insurmountable debt that they can't get out of, and the fact that bankruptcy is not an option when it should be, I think that's a violation of the constitutional rights, you know, when it comes to the bankruptcy code.
Mary Claire Anselm, you want to speak to that point?
Sure, absolutely. So he's absolutely right that currently student loans are not dischargeable in bankruptcy, and bankruptcy laws exist, you know, for a very important reason. In a private market, student loans should absolutely be dischargeable in bankruptcy. I think that would be, you know, wonderful policy that would alleviate a lot of these many problems. Unfortunately, this is just one of the many complications that come with a federal system. When you have federal student loans dischargeable in bankruptcy, again, it's American taxpayers who have to pick up that tab. And so it's the taxpayer exposure component that makes just student loans dischargeable in bankruptcy a little tricky, and you know, just another reason that I think we should look towards privatization.
And student loans, is the interest, can graduates write that off currently?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Can the interest that's paid be written off by on their taxes by by graduates?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay. Mark Kantrowitz, you want to respond to that issue of bankruptcy?
Right. So, first of all, the student loan interest deduction is an above-the-line exclusion from income, so it's subtracted from your gross income, of up to $2,500 per year of interest paid on federal and private student loans. So it exists. It's capped, but it runs for the life of the loan. There are proposals out there to remove the cap and to potentially increase the amount of interest that the typical borrower can exclude from income. I think that bankruptcy discharge rights should be 100% restored on both federal and private student loans. There's no really good justification for why you can't discharge a student loan in bankruptcy while you can discharge a credit card debt. I mean, student loans and credit card debt are in many ways quite similar. They're both unsecured debts. And that would perhaps force some of these private lenders to make offers and compromise to borrowers who are struggling financially to accommodate the financial difficulty that they're experiencing. And that that might yield more options for financial relief for borrowers instead of the current system where there's no light at the end of the tunnel. You're stuck with these loans for life.
What would, though, keep graduates from strategically filing for bankruptcy? So you're going to be starting out in your career where you're going to have limited income anyway. You're probably not going to be looking to try and get a mortgage, other big loans at that point. What would keep someone from graduating, essentially filing bankruptcy right out of the gate, and then you're sort of in bankruptcy purgatory over time, and then when you're ready, you know, you need some serious credit later on, you've worked your way out of that?
Well, and bankruptcy is not a panacea. It ruins your credit for 7 years, potentially even longer. So it's not something where someone would go to school and then immediately turn around and discharge their student loans in bankruptcy.
But why not? That's my question. Because if it's only 7 years that you're in that sort of purgatory, and you're not going to be buying a house, you're not going to necessarily need a car loan for, you know, an expensive car. Why not just strategically do that and serve out the 7 years?
Well, and if the lenders offered reasonable repayment plans, like the income-driven repayment plans on federal loans, there wouldn't be a need to have your loans discharged in bankruptcy because you'd have a affordable student loan payment plan. And this idea that students would turn around and discharge their loans in bankruptcy is the myth that was originally used to institute the bankruptcy rules that we see today. And originally in 1976, the lenders raised that myth, even though less than 1% of borrowers were seeking bankruptcy discharge per year. Now, if we were to restore such rights, there would be a backlog, and so we'd see initially a much higher rate of bankruptcy discharge, a few percentage points. But ultimately, the hit to the lender's spread is going to be less than 50 basis points. I mean, it's not a really big impact on the profitability of these student loans.
Mary Claire Amsalem of Heritage Foundation, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that it's certainly very interesting. Again, I just worry about the taxpayer exposure in all of this conversation. I think that all of the points are valid about why bankruptcy should exist, and I agree. I just simply wish that we were having this conversation in the context of a private system. I think that allowing taxpayers to be exposed to that, you would see, you know, maybe not the majority, but you would see some students certainly strategically take advantage of it, as you alluded to, and then American taxpayers are picking up that tab. We're already quite a bit in the hole. In terms of our federal funding towards higher education, I worry about policies that would make that worse.
Nicolette in Koreatown says, I funded my college through private loans and have somewhat fallen victim to loan predators. The idea that moving all to private loans would lower costs seems ridiculous to me. That's Nicolette. Mark Kantrowitz of SavingForCollege.com, what, in your view, what more needs to be done to keep students from falling victim to predatory lending? What's been the challenge in helping them avoid that?
Well, and the first thing we need is better counseling. I mean, every time a student borrows, they need to be made aware of how much debt they're going to have at graduation if they continue at the same rate, what their monthly loan payment would be on, say, a standard 10-year repayment term. But simply by increasing their awareness of the debt, it'll help them exercise more restraint. And there needs to be clear standards onto what interest rates are and are not acceptable. And the usury laws need to be better enforced. The borrowers need to have greater awareness of what their repayment options are on these loans so that they know whether or not they can get a temporary suspension of the obligation to repay the debt if they run into financial difficulty, whether interest will continue to accrue during that deferment or forbearance, and also what the repayment plan options are. I mean, 10 years, 20 years, or longer, income-driven versus level payments. They need to be able to make an informed decision.
All right. Let me bring Paul Fain, news editor at Inside Higher Education, back into this. Paul, what are the political prospects for these various plans making their way through Congress? And you know, what does polling indicate, if there is any of this, of taxpayer appetite for completely forgiving student loans?
Great question. Certainly people like the idea of having their loans forgiven, but when they start seeing bills like Senator Warren's cancellation plan costing $640 billion, it gets a little trickier. I do think, though, that the discourse on this has changed a tremendous amount. In the 2016 presidential election, you saw Bernie Sanders talk about free college and then free college for all. And then Hillary Clinton kind of joined in with a debt-free plan for all public college. And that would have been unheard of in the past. And it, the same thing goes with debt cancellation. You know, these ideas would have been viewed as extremely aggressive. And now two of the front runners for the Democratic presidential nomination are talking about either wiping out all $1.5 trillion or $640 billion through cancellation. One thing I will say, don't take your eye off of free community college as part of this discussion. A bunch of the candidates have put that out there, including Biden and Buttigieg. And one of the plans that seems to be taking on a lot of support, and even some on the right, not a lot, but is to do that free community college through a federal-state partnership where, say, the feds pick up 75% of that cost and the states another 25%. And, you know, with Obama was really trying to reframe free college as a K-14 system, where community college was part of the government's responsibility to ensure that students had access to that education. And I feel like that debate will continue going forward.
Hmm. And community college here in California essentially is free. So they can look to California as sort of an example of that, Paul.
Yes, and you know, there's a big chunk of the free community college argument is about messaging. You're right, the tuition costs, which aren't the entire cost of attending college, and there's growing awareness about that too, but in California are largely nominal for people who attend community college. But in Tennessee, which under a Republican governor created the biggest free community college program in the nation, they'll tell you that the messaging that college is for you goes beyond eliminating the relatively low cost of attending community college that still dissuades a lot of people from attending college.
I want to thank you all for being with us. Very good conversation. That's Paul Fain, news editor of Inside Higher Education. Our thanks as well to Vice President of Research for SavingForCollege.com, Mark Kantrowitz. And our thanks to the Heritage Foundation in D.C.'s education policy analyst, Mary Claire Amsalem. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. We have big news in Washington, D.C. to report for you. We'll share that with you in just a moment. We'll continue on Air Talk on KPCC.